HBO's series Watchmen is not strictly an adaptation of the landmark comic book series by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. It's technically a sequel.
It stars Regina King as an ex-cop in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who's not so secretly the masked vigilante Sister Knight. It also stars Don Johnson and Tim Blake Nelson alongside Jean Smart and a very odd Jeremy Irons, who are both playing characters from the comic.
Showrunner Damon Lindelof has set the show within a big, weird world that keeps getting bigger and weirder, even as it seeks to comment on some very contemporary, real-world issues. We're talking about HBO's very good Watchmen on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card, you can earn 5% back at Walmart online, 2% at Walmart in-store, restaurants, and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One N.A.
Welcome back. You just met Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Joining us today is the culture critic for the undefeated Soraya McDonald. Hi, Soraya.
Hello. It
has taken us way too long to get you on the show.
But I'm here.
And I'm so happy that you're here. We also have with us, she's an executive producer at Stitcher, Daisy Rosario, our buddy Daisy. Hi, Daisy. Glad to have you.
Hi, Linda. So happy to be here.
Before we get too deeply into this, let's set the stage a little bit more. So Watchmen takes place in essentially an alternate history United States where some things are the same, but some things are different. Some of the show is set in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the opening sequence retells the real story of the looting and burning of the prosperous black business district known as Black Wall Street in Tulsa in 1921. But when we come to the present where the show is set, we learn that the United States won the Vietnam War, so Vietnam is a state, and Robert Redford is president. Which they have a lot of fun with at times. The show is pretty stingy with information at first, but that initial story is about the fact that in this version of the world, the police wear masks to hide their identities, and their primary antagonists are white supremacists. Mm-hmm. Glenn, help us locate ourselves.
All right. All right. It is hard to overstate how deeply the original comic kind of hit me. It came out when I was 18 years old and going away to college. And it hit me so hard, I guess, because it was interrogating the superhero idea in a way that then was novel. It is no longer novel. And it hit me and a lot of people of my generation exactly the same way, because you can tell, because that idea, which is essentially, what if superheroes, no, but for real, though, that's the premise of this show.
Yeah,
that quickly became a well that people kept going back to over and over again, long after it dried up. The 2009 Zack Snyder film did what a lot of people in comics community do. They treated Watchmen, the comic, as a sacred text and just reproduced it almost shot for shot and got the tone wrong, got the meaning wrong, which is let's take this superhero idea, which is black and white, you know, good versus evil, and just insert nuance into it. That's something that the movie did not do in any meaningful way. The show, happily for me, uses the original comic as a jumping off point, and it jumps squarely onto, with both feet, the third rail of American culture, which is race and police brutality. I'm fascinated by this. I admire its fearlessness because it does insert nuance, much needed nuance. Episode by episode, it just gets more complicated and complex and hard to distill. And that's why I dig it so much.
We do have a clip of Damon Lindelof, who created the show and was also one of the creators of Lost and The Leftovers and a lot of other cool things. And he talked to Morning Edition about the decision to focus this show on race. And we actually brought a clip of that.
At the time that I was sort of approached to consider rethinking Watchmen, I had to answer the question, what is the pervasive sort of anxiety in America right now? And it was impossible, as all these things were happening, not just Charlottesville, but everything was happening through the lens of race. And it felt like there was a great reckoning happening in our country, overdue and necessary. This idea that Watchmen has always been about the history that has been kind of hidden and camouflaged, and also it's about the pain and trauma that is sort of buried in the American consciousness. And I started to feel like it was incredibly important to tell a story about race, to not tell a story about race in the context of a political text in 2019 almost felt borderline irresponsible.
So those are Lindelof's thoughts. So critics have seen, and we have all seen, the first six episodes. That's what HBO provided. The first, as we tape this, the first three have aired. So obviously, we're not going to spoil anything out of the three we haven't seen. But after seeing those six, Soraya, you wrote a great piece about Watchmen in which you talked about that you really liked and admired it.
Yes, absolutely. One, because it actually feels so different from anything else that's on television right now, both in just the way that it approaches its storytelling, which is so strange and deliberately strange and immersive and so committed to, like, imagining and building out this alternate America, but also because of this really detailed focus on the role that race and racism plays in American history, by starting out with the Tulsa Race Massacre of 1921 and then continuing to build off of that, to the point that now I think we're going to start seeing an exploration of intergenerational trauma, which was one of the things that I just really loved so much about Transparent. The way that show uses intergenerational trauma to talk about all these different aspects of Jewish culture, seeing that sort of unfold in Watchmen just made my heart grow, you know, several sizes.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned, and I felt this too, that first opening sequence set at the Tulsa Race Massacre makes a large promise, I think, to kind of justify the use of that imagery and make sure it doesn't feel exploitative. And I felt like ultimately, particularly by the end of these six, they absolutely got there. And I got the feeling that you thought they got there too.
Oh, yes, definitely. Because I think, like, that is, you know, a legitimate worry that if you decide to deploy something that's so horribly traumatic and violent, what is the reasoning for this? Like, is there going to be any sort of payoff, or is this just being treated as like, hey, here's like another thing that happened in American history, and
right,
and we're not actually going to examine
bloody this trauma for the sake of kind of showing how daring you are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I don't get the feeling that that's what this show is doing at all. And if that wasn't, like, that's a big enough challenge on its own. But then on top of that, Damon has also decided to fold in Oklahoma the Musical.
Yes. Yeah. And I do. I remind me to come back to Soraya about Oklahoma the Musical, because I want to get to Daisy, but then I want to come back and talk about Oklahoma the Musical. Don't let me forget. Daisy Rosario, tell me what you think about Watchmen.
I would start by saying, yes, we are not going to spoil anything, but boy, am I glad they gave us six episodes.
Me too.
This show is ambitious, and I feel like, you know, when I look at some of the things people have been saying, particularly in response to just the first three episodes that have aired, I think concerns that I saw, some of which, you know, things that Soraya just addressed, I understand why people have those concerns, but you got to stick with it, and it really, I do think it pays off. It's fascinating. Watchmen, the original series of comic books and thus the graphic novel, really is this, like, all-sprawling, like, massive landmark thing that, you know, exists in our minds above us as, you know, has this reputation that is just so hard to live up to. I don't know that I've ever said anything positive about Zack Snyder on the show, even while never being on an episode actually about anything he's made. I just find a way to work in acknowledging that I don't think he's ever actually understood the source material of anything he's ever made. And I stand by that assessment of the movie. But my goodness, I think that while people are so afraid that this series will not respect the source material, I think it respects the source material more than anything we have ever seen come out of any kind of relation to Watchmen before. And that's amazing. But I also didn't completely feel that way until I got through all six episodes. So if you are, you know, listening to this, if you're on the fence, if you're, you know, only three episodes in and you're not sure, absolutely stick with it. But it, to me, this is what I would love to see if people are going to go back to things that we already know, is update them respectfully, think about them in creative ways, really look at what the core is that worked for us and grabbed us as people, you know, years ago when the things first came out. I mean, that aspect of it really just knocked me out, you know? And I think that you can also, I think many people have probably rightly made the point many times, that the original Watchmen, one of the faults of it is that it doesn't acknowledge race in any meaningful way. And you can't really look at American society without acknowledging the lens of race. And so I feel like also the first three episodes alone, or especially the first two, really make it feel like that will be the only focus. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. watching all six, I really feel like this is a complex look at American culture, because American culture is complex, but this one gets that you can't talk about it without that. But it is not only focusing on that. It is taking all of the things that we know from all of the questions that we know from the original, and I think genuinely updating them for our times.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that makes me think about when we have this conversation about how do you adapt and how do you update is weirdly, having seen the original Broadway cast of Hamilton, when it began to tour, and also when the Broadway cast turned over, one of the things that occurred to me was that was a good way to be reminded that it's not just a performance that it was great to see, but that it was a work of authorship. And I think when you take something like Watchmen, if you demonstrate that you can update the ideas of it to respond to different contemporary things, what you're respecting is the fact that it's a bigger idea, and that idea can bend and adapt and have new shape. And I think it reminded me a little bit, too, of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, mm-hmm. in the sense that Miles is a different Spider-Man. That's a different idea, but it's still Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And that film has different points of focus and spends its energy in different ways. But it's still operating with that idea of Spider-Man. And I also want to say, we haven't talked about it too much yet, but I think the performances in this show are so fantastic. I mean, I think Regina King is having this wonderful phase of her career where she's getting a ton of great roles and she's great in all of them. I did not see the big year that Don Johnson is having coming. I think he's pretty good in this. He's also very funny in Knives Out, which is coming out mm-hmm. soon. And I think that you know, as you go through, you know, Louis Gossett Jr. is in this. Yeah. They're such a big, terrific cast.
And then with the episode three, the addition of Jean Smart!
Who
just opens up the show in so many meaningful ways with that wonderful performance, but also real solid connections at last to the comic that are there for people like me who have internalized the comic and will just kind of build out the world of this series a little bit more. It is a testament to the power of serialized storytelling over weeks as opposed to a binge. Now, you and I and all of us talking on this podcast right now dealt with it as a binge. We got the six episodes all at once. But the structure of it recalls the comic. So it fractures time, it loops back and forth, you get multiple viewpoints, just like the comic. And the show is remarkably patient in doling out mm-hmm. its revelations. And also in doling out its tone. I think people can come away from that first episode thinking, this series thinks the idea that some cops are racist is like enough to drive a plot.
Right.
And it isn't. And what will happen over the course of several weeks is that concept will fold in on itself and mm-hmm. reveal itself to be not just the kind of surface flat thought that it actually turns out to be.
Yeah. Well, now I want to go to the obviously important and perhaps cliched idea that you cannot talk about Watchmen without talking about the Broadway musical Oklahoma. Soraya, you had written about the Broadway production of Oklahoma that has been very acclaimed in the last year or so, in which the female lead, Lori, is played by a black actress. And the entire show is very inverted in this interesting way. People talk about it being the dark Oklahoma. Oklahoma's already pretty dark.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's differently dark. They have a performance of Oklahoma happening in an episode of this show. Talk to me about how this all struck you.
So this performance of Oklahoma that shows up in Watchmen just tickled me. So it's an all-black production. But unlike the dark Oklahoma or the sexy Oklahoma that is currently running on Broadway, this one is basically pretty much like the sort of romanticized vision of Oklahoma that we associate with Rodgers and Hammerstein, except the entire cast is black. But one of the things I think that it does is it sort of illuminates this idea of who is on top in this particular version of American society, or who is perceived to be on top or be in power. And a large part of that comes from the existence of these reparations for the Tulsa Race Massacre, which the 7th Cavalry tends to refer to rather derisively as Red Fredations. So, you know, for once, almost surprisingly, these Black people who are the descendants of the Tulsa Race Massacre have actually received compensation from the government and, like, a real acknowledgement of this tragedy that happened and the ways that it affects generational wealth. And this actually, you know, in some ways, like, stirs the pot in terms of who has power Tulsa, right?
For sure.
You know, one of the things that's so fascinating is watching this raid on Nixonville and being reminded of the ways that cops still to this day will, like, roll up on the projects and just, like, arrest everybody, right? It's like a scene out of The Wire, except the people in Nixonville are poor and white and not poor and Black.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the things that I admire about this show is that it has so much going on thematically, but they also do have a little bit of, I mean, they have a good amount of fun with Jeremy Irons, who is doing whatever it is he's doing, sort of off living in what seems to be a castle surrounded by kind of servants who are disposable in this odd way.
And in the series, you know, we'll continue to see some of it, but there's that series within the series where we see, you know, kind of these, like, recreations of the heroes' lives.
Yeah, American heroes.
American hero story. And that just, to me, so far has been playing the role of the pirate stories that are in the original Watchmen. So in that sense, too, I mean, really, again, showing that level of respect for understanding, like, there were all of these parts that went into making that piece of work have so much depth, have so much thought. And it doesn't feel like Lindelof has stripped any of that away, but really tried to think about what role did each thing play in that. I'm excited about this and seeing the way that they're playing with all of these. And then just the level of quality of each aspect of this. You know, we've acknowledged the acting already, but we also absolutely have to acknowledge the music, Reznor and Atticus Ross. And then not just that, but in later episodes, the music supervision choices, the music that is happening that is not created by them is also just so skillfully deployed and thoughtful. And it, I wouldn't say that the show is the easiest watch by any means, right? But it, boy, does it pay off. It's just fascinating.
Yeah. All right. Well, tell us what you think about Watchmen when you've had a chance to see it. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. You can follow Soraya McDonald at Soraya McDonald. You can find Daisy Rosario at my favorite handle on Twitter, RunDMR. Thanks to you guys for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
I just thanked
Linda
on behalf of Soraya. It's because I'm staring at her.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, subscribe to our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday.
How will you remember the past decade in music? I'm Robin Hilton with NPR's All Songs Considered. Join us as we look back at the defining trends and moments of the 2010s, from Beyoncé to Bandcamp. Listen twice a week on All Songs Considered from NPR.